Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to We're Drunk and We Know Things.
Bienvenue! Don't know where that came from. That was a different energy than the last take.
Sure. Mike has now taken up a job as an airport greeter.
I've been watching a lot of French TV recently, so I'm going to be lapsing into French
for some reason. You have the second aerial work.
It's really bad, yeah.
We are recording, for once, on a Friday night. Friday evening.
Yep.
This is our... What's the word? It's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
It's our Pompeii. No.
Dunkirk?
It's the thing that we can't do, anyway.
Yes.
The thing that we've never beaten.
Yeah.
It's our kryptonite.
Look, basically, it normally just ends up in a Barney, and then we don't have a podcast.
Well, no, we've always had a podcast. It's just we've always had a period of a couple of days afterwards where we haven't spoken.
And then decided that we can't put that out. The public will hate it when they hear Mummy and Daddy fighting.
No. Also, which ones? No.
No, let's not get into it. That's how the argument starts.
This month, we've decided that the best way that we can avoid a massive bust-up is to return to the beginning.
We really
almost the beginning. Because this
The penultimate month, beginning.
The penultimate The second beginning. This month, we are going back to the third and fourth episodes that we ever did, but we're putting a slightly different spin on them.
Oh, yeah.
Those of you who remember, the third episode was Blade Runner, and then we talked about butts.
They're talking about butts.
This month, we're talking about Blade Runner 2049 and robots. Different kind of bot, innit? different kind of bot. Yeah, totally different.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
Yes.
Jesus
Just
Christ.
For those trying to keep track of where the edit points are. Sure.
So.
Anyway. So yes, we are doing Blade Runner 2049, followed by Talking About Bots,
but
Mark 2.
Before we get into that good business...
Oh yeah, right, I always forget about that.
We have to get into some different business.
The different business.
Do we have any?
Look, I forgot about the different business. We could talk about how much I've been playing Skyward Sword.
It's not really news,
Seems
though, is
a bit
it?
Weak source. The news is I've been playing a computer game. Weak source, isn't it?
Okay.
Oh, well, I tell you what, we could have an update on our NFTs.
We could, but in order to do that, because the way we record these, we are going to need to go forward in time.
Perfect. I'm game. Okay, fine. What's happened? Literally nothing's happened.
And, I mean, it's either amazing or not that that happened.
Yeah. The news is there is no news.
No, the news is that the NFT auction has finished, and it was either amazing or it wasn't.
It was a success.
But
now let me take that again. It was a complete failure. You can cut in whichever one you need.
Thank you. It's useful.
Yeah. I don't know why I talk like that in that bit.
Other world news, NFT world, news of the NFT world. It's like a red top, but it's really expensive.
It's gone off the rails already.
It's fine. Keep going. Here to tell us what else is going on in the world of shit tokens is our producer. Good evening, Mr. Producer. Do not say it. Do not say it. Told you.
Hello.
All right.
There's a different tone.
Chirpy.
I'll let him off. Different tone.
No, that's... Okay. Hello. Yeah.
Hello.
Hey.
No.
That's worse.
Right, what's good? Sharp. We're running out of time.
Right. So
running out of time.
NFT watch.
The main two things I wanted to talk about is, you know how they're stupid?
Yes, I'm quite, yeah,
and
we're familiar.
People usually respond with, but what do you get? Isn't it just a JPEG?
Yeah.
And, you know, you're like, yeah, but it's by an artist who's like a credible digital artist and stuff.
Oh, you like that, though?
Yeah, like a local podcast.
Like that guy Bitly or whatever his name is.
Yeah. So, like... You could argue it's art.
That's
so,
a link shortener.
It's
art.
So it's art, yeah.
So people have basically devolved into, do you remember Pogs?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you remember how it was just plastic discs?
First of all, they were cardboard discs. The plastic discs were the Keenies. Don't be ridiculous.
Well, they were Slammers, mate.
They were Keenies. They were
Slammers?
Called, they were called Keenies with the full name.
What?
I've got a freezer bag full of Pogs under the bed in the second bedroom, mate, and I will prove you both wrong.
Why?
Because I don't like throwing stuff away.
Okay. Well, I know what we're doing next time we just settle something on this podcast.
If you listener want to hear Sit more about Pogs, write in.
Choose your weapons.
There is a current... All right, let's get this back on track.
Go ahead.
There's currently a thing in the NFT world where people have JPEGs of a rock. It is not of a physical rock. It is a little vector rock.
Yeah, but and they're all different colours, but it's the same...
Same rock, very slightly different colours.
Right.
And so there are other things out there where it's like it's a face, but it has different attributes where... You have like a different hat or some glasses. This is literally a rock with an ever so slightly different colour of grey.
Can you get a rock with a hat on?
No That's attributes, whatever.
That's my business.
So people are paying a lot of money for these because they're rare and internet. So the baseline price of a rock at the moment is about 240 grand.
To be clear, he's not talking about crack.
No, it's actually considerably more expensive.
Not even a rock. Oh, the rock from the moon? Oh, no, it's just a picture of a rock. What? Oh, like a hand-drawn picture
the
of a rock.
Rock.
Oh,
the
no.
actor? No.
I'm pretty sure you could get him to come around for tea for 240 grand.
I bet you could get him to do some other interesting stuff for 240. So, actually, no, not the money you get paid.
That's why you still have a restraining order.
So I get stuff it, for free, there's it? Like, obviously loads of people are drawing parallels from when, like, the pet rock... thing in the 70s.
Oh, right, yeah, sure, yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you're just selling rocks. Yeah, but
oh, my God. Right, so we're doing NFTs of trolls with really long hair next. That's next. That's what comes next. You get ready on the NFT pogs, because they're coming. They're coming.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but recently I've been styling my look after that, so we're well away. We've already got a basis.
Again, brilliant for an audio-only medium.
Look, I've got big hair. There you go, sorted, isn't it? Now that joke's good.
So, yeah. I thought, oh, well, there's probably some... of these NFTs that I've not seen covered in major like news, so they're maybe still cheap.
But they've never been covered in Moss because they do not, in fact, roll.
Well, no, so I was
no,
like,
they do roll.
I found a couple that I thought, oh, okay, this is like they're monkeys and they've got different hats or whatever. They're going to be cheap. The cheapest one I found is still 40 grand.
Nice.
So, you know, maybe we should be doing the Trolls or the Pogs or something.
I'm just saying. I mean, it does explain why our NFT auction was such a...
success. Or failure.
Thank you. it turns out that, yeah, this is the future.
So, on the other side, there are...
if we make £250,000 of our NFT, I'm never doing this podcast again.
We wouldn't even edit this and put it out.
Fuck
so
it. No, just...
If
no.
you're hearing this,
put
we
it,
did
just
not.
Put it out raw. All the bleepers, fuck it. Just me being like, you know what, motherfucker, I don't care anymore.
So on the other side, there's obviously still legitimate businesses that are trying to like utilise this from a creative point of view. The one that was announced today is a Masterminds of Hip Hop.
Sure, okay,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Created by a Russell Simmons, but along with you know, Chuck D, Snoop...
Well, you know what else was announced today is that they are digitizing Gene Roddenberry's personal notes and sketches, and they are going to sell and auction those off as NFTs as well. And for those, obviously, you don't get the real thing because that belongs to the Roddenberry estate. However, you will own the only digital copy of the sketches and scans of his Star Trek notes and that kind of stuff, which makes it a little bit cooler because it is the only other copy that's not owned by the Roddenberry estate. But it is still a scan. I mean, you're still getting a PDF of a Star Trek script.
Well, so what you won't reply all the way from a lack of exclusivity.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Masters of Hip Hop one, essentially, it's a special collectible that is co-designed and co-created by Russell Simmons and Snoop. And it will be a piece of hip hop history.
God damn it.
Basically,
what,
captivating a part of the stories that those artists are going to tell as part of a.
It's just a gif of him lighting a joint.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Well, there'll be like 40 of those.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's no rights attached. There's no. But yeah, again, see the previous story about the JPEG of a.
Savvy businessmen making money off of idiots because they can.
And that's the story of hip hop. No,
no, that's not true. I mean, that's not untrue. To be fair. So, oh my god, are we doing?
I mean, obviously, there's still
hip hop right now.
No.
There's still stuff going on, but those were the two most interesting stupid things in NFT world.
Thank you very much, Mr. Producer. You can go back to scouring the internet for affordable digital rocks that you don't own.
Failure. Sorry, we weren't doing it for that bit.
I'm assuming some kind of digital Japanese garden.
Yeah. Oh.
Like NFT bonsais.
No, bonsais were never really that big. They were still always quite niche.
They're never that big. They're tiny.
So hard to
portmanteau
that as well. Anyway, should we move on to the episode proper?
I think we should.
I mean, yeah. So as you mentioned, we are going back to the beginning. The penultimate beginning, almost the beginning. What was the beginning? Aliens. Also available as an NFT. Where all good NFTs are available.
Yeah. Well, actually, specifically, it's not available anymore.
Oh, yeah, it's already
been
sold.
It was only available in one place.
Yeah, it was already been sold.
Maybe.
And also, I'm not doing this anymore. Peace. Anyway. So anyway, we're going back to the sort of the beginning, and we're doing sort of the same thing, but we're not. It's also the sequel. And that sequel is Blade Runner 2049. Got there in the end.
Woo! Just to be clear, we also had to fit it in the same time frame as the original. That was 20 minutes long.
Oh,
and
really?
We burnt, like, 50 minutes on rocks.
Yeah, and also, I, like, had, like, a lot of notes, and then I got drunk and watched a film last night and then doubled those notes, so
all
strap
right.
in, bitches! we'll be fine. We'll work through it as quick as we can. It's been fine. So, it's directed by Denis Villeneuve. Denis Villeneuve. His name's Denis Villeneuve. That is his name. It came out in 2017, ironically, because it's Blade Runner 2049, isn't it?
What?
It's ironic, because it came out earlier than it's...
Didn't all of them? I mean, maybe not like 1918, but that was historical.
And that's ironic because it's later.
Okay.
It's possible that I'm misunderstanding what irony is.
Maybe.
And also time travel. Anyway, it was written by Hampton Fancher, which sounds like a name that I've made up or said wrong, but that's his name, Hampton Fancher.
Did you check?
Yes. I panicked when I said it out loud and I thought, no, I did check, that's what he's called. He wrote the original Blade Runner, Hampton Fancher. Sounds like I made
just
that.
Just to be clear, he adapted.
Yeah, he wrote the original screenplay for
every
Blade
time.
Runner based on the book, Do Androids Dream of Sheep? Of which it doesn't hold that much of a resemblance, to be fair. And Michael Green.
Took some wild creative license there.
Yeah, really wild. And also co-written by Michael Green, who wrote Logan and Jungle Cruise.
Well, you know, after you've knocked a couple out of the park, you just want to sit back and relax.
Yeah, exactly.
And count that Disney money.
Yeah, get a payday. A la LaRocque. The Budge, as I've called it. I think it's called Budget. I think it's other known. But
Budgie.
The Budge. The Budgie is 150 to 185 million, which is like such a big...
Give or take.
35 million dollars. And it made $265 million. So not terribly successful commercially.
How much of that $265 million was you...
Oh, right, sorry. I was like, I didn't cost him anything on the... Oh, I see, yes. Yeah, I saw this five times in the cinema.
Yeah.
In like 6 days. Oh, no, actually, no, I saw it more than that because I'd seen Skyfall five times in a week and this broke that, so I think I must have seen it 6 or 7 times in a week.
And on the seventh day, he rested.
The seventh time, he had a migraine. I've eaten so much popcorn, oh, God. Anyway, so this movie came out. It is good.
Wow.
The end. 18 minutes.
Okay. We'll see you next month. Yeah. No. Right, so...
So we're going to do things a little bit differently this month in that we're going to do the plot and the production notes at the same time.
Basically, we're going to talk about the film as it goes along, and then you're going to call out interesting bits.
Yep.
And this is definitely not going to go off the rails.
No. I've got very structured notes, which I wrote while I was drunk, that I'm going to read out while I'm drunk. So it'll be fine. What could possibly go wrong?
Just read out. You live them.
Yeah, I don't read out my notes. If I did, it would be very weird. These are bullet points. So we're going to go through my notes now, Rob.
All right, come on.
In a conversational way.
By the numbers. A plot of Blade Runner 2049. Jesus, this gets complicated.
In 2049, replicants are both legal and slaves. And quite openly acknowledged that they are slaves, that they are a slave race, a slave whatever. Everyone says it the whole time. They say, yes. Yeah, we made him slavery. KD6-3.7, or K for short, is a Blade Runner for the LAPD. He is played by Mr. Ryan Gosling.
He is.
And they use him to great effect because they say, don't do any emotion apart from when you have to do, like, crazy emotion. Otherwise, just don't do
it. A toss-up between him and Kirsten Stewart.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. He is a Blade Runner, which is essentially a case, for those who don't know, essentially a bounty hunter who hunts down rogue replicants. In this case, Nexus 8s, which were the previous model. There's a lot of lore, but I'm not going to get into
it. There's not too much. They were the previous model. A lot of them were military.
Yeah, they were the last model made by the Tyrell Corporation before the Wallace Corporation started making them. He's a Wallace model who obey way better, essentially.
Yeah, sure.
That's it. Next states have a bit of free will, and they tend to go a bit rogue, and he hunts them down.
He goes off on a mission. He's got a contract.
He does. So he goes off to a protein farm.
Which is basically bug farming, which is suitably accurate, and it provides us with a good opportunity to have a fairly classic flying car cityscape moment.
Yes, exactly.
Because
absolutely.
It's Blade Runner, isn't it?
Yeah, Blade Runner. So a lot of those. He goes to, and this particular protein farm is owned by Sapper Morton, who's played by Dave Bautista.
Okay, if you're going to do this much detail, we are not getting through this in a day, let alone an hour.
I don't know what to tell you.
Right. He is played by Dave Bautista. Basically a quick bit of back and forth, bit of bants.
Yep.
And Dave Bautista throws him through a wall.
Yes,
which is very
satisfying. He smashes him against a wall for ages, and that there's an amazing shot from the other side of the wall where you see him slowly break the wall through with him, which is very good. So he essentially, they have a big old fight. He's trying to take down Sapper Morton because he's an Nexus 8.
The key thing is during the initial banter, Sapper Morton makes reference to the fact that Kay has never seen a miracle.
Yes, indeed.
And we're all there going, okay, well, this is weirdly poetic. They waited to the end of the last movie before they broke that shit out.
Yeah.
And eventually...
Big old fight, stab, dead.
Yeah, dead. Got it.
So cuts his eye out because it's got the Nexus 8 reference number on. That's how they identify. Essentially, it's like his scalp, basically, right? They're paying for scalps, except his eyes.
Then gets in touch with his boss.
Very quickly, if I may.
Why?
If I may. Because originally, the original opening scene for the original Blade Runner was Deckard going to a farm and hunting down a replicant and killing said replicant and ripping off his jaw, because the jaw, they were mostly synthetic at that point in the drafts of that script. So this is actually a scene which was planned for the original Blade Runner that was never shot, that was reused for this film.
Nice. Okay.
There you go, see? I know stuff.
We are 10 minutes into recording, and we're 3 minutes into the film.
So he finds a box. He goes back and he's like, that's weird. There's a tree there. That's weird. Why didn't there's a drone thing on top of my car, which is really cool, by the way, that drone thing. Why didn't they scan the ground just on a hunch for some reason, because movie reasons, and he finds a box?
Well, no, there's a reason, because he finds a flower. It's clearly been tended, and it's a dead tree.
Yes, indeed. Someone's put a flower on a grave.
Also, he does put the eye on the barcode scanner, and it doesn't say unintended item in bagging area, which I find very disappointing.
Yeah, indeed.
He finds a box, and his boss tells him to come back in to get re-baselined.
Yeah.
Because he is a replicant, he needs to be tested routinely to make sure that he is still
behaving. Which is like the new version of the Turing test, basically.
It's not the Turing test, it's what's it? The
Voight.
Cobb.
Voight-Kampf.
Yeah. Which he comes back in and does, and then he goes home.
Yes. He goes home.
To meet...
Joy. Oh, no. We skipped a bit.
Have we?
Yeah. He takes the body home, and they takes the body to the LAPD, and they unpack the body.
He goes home.
Goes home first, and then they do that?
Yes.
Okay, fine. So he goes home, and he sees Joy, and she's like, I'm Ana de Armas.
Well, in
like
the first
Hepburn and
the
Tracy
first moment,
kind of.
You think, hang on a minute, because he punches some buttons on the wall, puts some pasta on, and he's talking to a female
someone
voice.
Someone in another room, yeah.
And then he's walking around, and she's clearly asking him about his day and saying that her day was really bad. And you're like, okay,
yeah.
Is she completely made up?
Yeah.
Because he pours two drinks, and then he drinks both of them.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that she is completely made up, but with a twist.
Yes.
So,
So she's a hologram, essentially. So she's an artificial intelligence and hologram. So she is, as we both observed, she's essentially Siri.
I mean, to be fair, if Siri looked that good, I might use it.
Fair. So, moving on. So, she's a holographic projected, a light hologram projected for those in the parlance of Red Dwarf. She's not a hard light hologram. She's a soft light hologram.
I like that we're using holograms. Red Dwarf is the definitive reference.
That's literally how I think about it. She can't pick stuff up because she's a soft light hologram. So he puts his meal down and she brings him over a holographic steak and all that kind of stuff. They have a bit of banter. She goes through various options of like, do you want to read to me? Do you want to dance? Do you want to do whatever? And blah, 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 blah.
Okay, at this point we're in real time on the movie.
Indeed.
Key plot development at this point is that he has bought her an emitter.
Yes.
Which allows her to actually leave the apartment. She's no longer tied to the apartment.
It's like the light bee in Red Dwarf.
The first thing they do is they go outside. Yes. It is raining, of course, because
she wants to go out in the rain.
Noir. No, I don't think she really cares. She's outside, made of light.
And they go to kiss, and then it freezes, so that
because
he gets an incoming
call. We have dug out the box. You need to come in.
Now, I do want to go back very quickly to for one thing, is that in the book that she says, "Why don't you read to me?" is a book called Pale Fire by Vladimir Nabokov. That book is a 999-line poem. It's very, very complicated, and I'm not going to go into it for the interests of time. However, the more I've read about it, I bought a copy because it sounds amazing.
Okay.
It's a 999-line poem, which is annotated and has a foreword and a index. The poem is written by a person called John Shade, which is a made-up author, and then all of the annotation is done by a person called Charles Kimboat, who is a self-appointed editor who is writing notes about his relationship with the poet and all this kind of stuff. This is written by an extra person, so it's like metafiction. And then in the annotation, it transpires that he got control of the book because John Shade was murdered. So there's like the story of a novel in the annotation and index of a poem. It's like this great work of Russian fiction from the 60s. Sounds absolutely amazing. The more I've read about it, I basically bought a copy. Sounds absolutely incredible. So anyway, however, the important part is the cells on cells on cells intersplit and all that kind of stuff. Those lines come from that book. Those lines come from the book. Indeed. Which is a more succinct way than I did it.
It's fine.
I'll admit. So anyway, so he goes back to the LAPD and Lieutenant Joshi, played by Robin Wright, is like, we're looking into this body. So they look into that body. And it turns out that it's a female who died during childbirth. There are stab wounds, but it looks like she essentially died during an emergency C-section. But then Kay, with his super robot eyes, or not robot eyes,
I think he uses something. The microscope, to be honest. He just zooms in.
He sees something and then he zooms in. But anyway, so he zooms in and is a serial number showing that she was a replicant, which is impossible because replicants cannot reproduce, or rather, shouldn't be able to. They obviously can, otherwise they wouldn't be a film.
Yes.
So,
what have we got now?
He gets the reference and he goes off to Wallace Corp. Now, turns out that the Wallace Corp has bought the Terrell Corp, or Corporation. We were the company that made replicants in the original Blade Runner. And that is a place which is run by Neander Wallace, played by Jared Leto. But we don't meet him yet.
No.
So he goes there.
We meet his secretary.
His secretary called Love. And it's pre-blackout code, and he finds records of a recording of the original interview between Deckard and Rachel.
Just to be clear, by the way, the reason we're not saying what the blackout is because they don't reference it at all. They never explain it.
No, they explain it in one of the prequel movies, which we'll come to later.
Yeah. Go on. Considering there are literally two movies in this series, and then a bunch of additional stuff that's been bolted on, they do not reference the blackout.
No, they don't reference the blackout.
Or rather, they don't explain it.
No, but you can kind of guess, right? You're going to guess what it is from inference. Inference? Yeah. Anyway, so he gets that, and he learns the name Rick Deckard, but not the name Rachel. So he learns the name Rick Deckard. So
a nice little clip of audio from the first film.
Very much so, yeah. And he says about you can tell that she wants him and all that kind of good stuff. So he goes to a retirement home or a hospital or somewhere and visits
Gaff. Interviews Edward James Olmos.
Yeah, Edward James Olmos, who says such a wonderful things as, I could tell he wasn't long for this world. There was something in his eyes and stuff like that. So he's referencing the red shit in the eyes and all that.
And
kind of
basically
stuff.
He is, leave me alone, leave me alone. Yeah. He wanted to be alone and so did I, so yeah, leave me alone.
Leave me alone, leave him alone, like leave them all alone. Then makes the origami sheep and he does one with very few answers. But Edward James almost was in the film again, so that was nice.
It was, yeah.
It was nice, it was very nice. Then we cut to Neander Wallace, played by Jared Leto. That's right. Keeping
up the
pace.
A new model.
Now, he wants to know the secret. They've got a new model. He wants to know the secret to reproduction so he can expand interstellar exploration. So he can make essentially generational ships of replicants. They've colonized 9 new worlds, and he wants to colonize further. The only way they could do that is that replicants who obey him as a slave race can make generational ships, so they can have children, and those children will obey him, and that kind
Did
of stuff.
He referenced generational. Further. I thought it was just.
He doesn't say generational, but that's the idea, right? He just wants to get further.
No, the idea is that it's much quicker to have them fuck and have babies than it is to build them.
Yeah, because he says at one point that he'd need millions upon billions to be able to spread across the galaxy.
Yes. Just, yeah. It's a numbers game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That, which is what a generational ship is.
Yeah, but he doesn't make any reference to generational ships.
I was just trying to be succinct, and you've ruined it. Now I'm talking about it for ages.
Because the key point is...
Don't be succinct.
Is,
can I've got you on record saying don't be succinct.
He has a massive hard-on for making he's way more of them. And he's realised, actually, the cost and time required to build them would be scant... You know, nothing compared to if they could reproduce. So effectively, he wants concentration camps full of replicants or bone-in and popping them out like God knows
what. And this also ties into a lot of like the feminist themes of the film, where it's essentially a man trying to take control of reproduction, like trying to take away the last vestige of
well, given that he literally cuts out the replicant's womb in front of us, it's a bit on the nose,
I didn't say it wasn't on the nose, I just said it was one of the things.
It's fine, let's carry on.
So, the water room that he's introduced in, by the way, is based on the Kizumizu Dera, which is a famous ancient temple in Kyoto, Japan. The type of floor that they use in there is called a nightingale floor, because when you walk, it squeaks and knocks, essentially, to announce...
Assassin-proofing,
exactly. But because he is blind, it's meant to play into that so you can hear them coming, essentially. He actually wore opaque contact lenses the whole time.
He could have just had one of those things across the door like they have in Korean laundrettes.
Right, yes.
Bing bong.
Yes, he could have.
Hasn't got quite the same
mystique. It's not the same, it's not got the same poetic tone.
He'd know they were there.
It would have worked. So he wore opaque contact lenses the whole time he was on set because he's Jared Leto and he's like method, except he's misunderstood what method means.
Meth head, yeah.
Disappointingly, Denis Villeneuve wanted David Bowie to play Neander Wallace, but when they had a conversation about it, and David Bowie was open to it, but then unfortunately David Bowie passed away. That would have been, I mean, fuck it. But
would have been
like
David Bowie's second greatest film role,
after Starman or Prestige.
Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. Okay, fine. Yeah, the other one. Sure, the one I don't like. Right. Yeah. Okay. I like Jared Leto in his role, though. To be fair, I must say, I think he brings a suitable level of creepy weirdness to it.
Suitably menacy. There's a thing that we'll talk about in a minute that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Okay. So he says to Love, who's played by Sylvia Hoex, who is basically his like zealot bodyguard, secretary, replicant lady, assistant. Yeah. He's like, go and get Rachel's remains. We don't know the Rachel's, but go and get the remains and find that kid. Follow Kay and get the kid. So she immediately goes and sees Mariette, played by Mackenzie Davis, who's like, go and speak to Kay at the bar. And they go and speak to Kay, and he's like, I'm a Blade Runner, fuck off. There's that quick scene. The reason I mentioned her is I'm going to bring up the Robo threesome recently, so I have to bring up the initial scene she's in.
That's fine.
So I can bring it up later. Kay goes back to Sapper's home, and he finds a photo of a woman holding a baby and a sock. A little baby sock. And then he burns the place down to the ground.
He burns the place down to the ground after he sees a date carved into a tree root and has a mega flashback.
Well, he actually burns the car down, then he goes and sits in the car, then he sees the tree, then he sees the date. But that's fine. He carved into a tree and he remembers that the number was also carved into a wooden horse, which he has a memory of holding as a child. But how could he have that memory?
Here we go.
He is a replicant. And all of his memories are implanted to keep him sane.
It's okay, though, because they're going to completely explain that absolutely in due course.
Yes.
It's one of my niggles about this movie versus the original. The original doesn't explain a damn thing. This one has...
Yeah, okay.
It feels like it needs to kind of... It's still deep and rich, but it does feel a bit more like it's like, here comes the aeroplane.
But it is also... I agree with you 100%, but it's a modern Hollywood film as opposed to a Blade Runner, which was a sleeper kind of movie. I agree with you 100%. But yeah.
Anyway,
so he... he goes home and he's like, oh, I've got this horse. But then Joshi turns up and gets drunk. And then basically, she's horrible. When Robin Wright comes to his apartment and is like, what the fuck are you doing? She like, you can really feel that kind of subservient second class citizen. She walks in, starts pouring herself a drink, doing all this stuff like, because it doesn't matter because he's not a person. It's very, Robin Wright's very good at
that scene.
I've
known many of your kind.
Yeah, exactly. and at one point.
And then kind of hits on him.
Yeah, cuts on him and she says, what happens if I finish this bottle? And he's like, yeah, I've got work to do. So it's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
A bit weird. But a bit of a role reversal of the genders from the last film, certainly, of like.
There's a lot of reversals in this.
Weird, that, isn't it, being the sequel?
Well, no, I mean, you could have just gone wrong with the same theme.
She thinks she's human and then she turns out she's a replicant. He thinks he's a replicant and he thinks he's a human. It's almost like what? Yeah, weird. It's like poetry, it rhymes. Oh no, wait, that's Star Wars. Anyway, he talks to Joy about it, and she's like, I always knew you were special. And he's like, Jesus Christ, shut up. And, you know, I don't massively blame her because she's a bit annoying. But she's programmed to be, I guess. But she's like, you're a real boy.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
I need to give you a real name, and your name's going to be Joe.
Yeah. Which
imagination, not programming.
Gets a little bit explained later on. Mm. But to be honest, I would say testament to whoever programmed the AI, because, you know, metaphysical discussion about the origins of being.
And I must say,
Siri right now can't even put washing up powder on the shopping list.
But I must say, I think she's written very well in that she's recognisably an AI.
She gets less so.
I think, yes, definitely. As soon as she's on the mobile emitter thing, then definitely. But she feels like Siri reacting to a question you've asked her, but in like a way where she wants to bang you.
There's very, very rapid evolution, and you can see why. And they do the same thing again, as you will speak to in the Robo Threesome.
Yes. So, he goes to the LAPD, and he's like, oh, I need to find out about kids that were born on a certain date, the date that it was on the horse. And he turns out that there were twins that were born. The girl died, and the boy survived, and he was sent to a very specific orphanage.
I would like to point out that he does this using a Japanese microfiche machine that takes marbles.
Yes, and also has like lines of
DNA,
lines of DNA that she like superimposes herself, which is a precursor to a later the theme, the film that we'll come, the scene that we'll come to, and they find a thing. The boy survived, the girl died, and he is such a good detective that he doesn't think, oh, and then definitely the boy's me. Then I know he's emotionally invested as well. To be fair, but that's, I always think, well, obviously you'd say the girl died if you're trying to hide her identity. But anyway, whatever. So they fly across, and he said, do you want to go for a ride? And then it's just like a fucking amazingly awesome bit of flying across Los Angeles. There's the seawall, because of climate change has happened, obviously, so there's this enormous seawall, which is like basically a dam keeping the sea away. They fly over San Diego, which is essentially just a, well, it is just a trash yard. It's just a wasteland, a literal wasteland where they're dumping waste. There's a very good, really great action scene that I really like, where they get shot down with a harpoon in the gun.
Yes.
And they get attacked by all the scrapyard people.
It's called Getting Franklin'd.
Getting Franklin'd?
He literally hits his car with a kite attached to a string, and the kite gets struck by lightning.
Yes.
And it takes out the car and his girlfriend.
That's very good. Yeah, of course, because she goes out because obviously she's electric.
And then she comes back online, but glitchy.
She's electric, sorry.
And then, yeah, lots of scrapyard workers show up.
And then, yeah, and then Love, because she needs him to find the child, blows them all up with a drone.
Yes. Drones, several.
Drones, in fact, yes.
So and does so whilst getting her nails painted, which gives you the first clue that this particular character is possibly a little bit batshit.
Yeah, indeed. Now, that that whole area is actually based on the Bangladeshi shipyards, you know, where they strip down the boats and cut them into bits of scrap, essentially. So that's based on that area as a production scouting place. And then he goes to the orphanage and he meets Lenny James, one of my absolute favourite actors, because he's so fucking good in everything he is in. He's so fucking good in everything he's in. He thinks he's there initially to buy a kid on the DL, which is upsetting. I never really quite got, for some reason, the full scope of Lenny James is trying to sell him a child until last night when I was like, oh, right, yeah, he's not there to like adopt a kid. He thinks he's trying to buy a kid. So fucked up.
What kind would you like?
I've got all kinds. He blows the whistle and they all stand up and stuff. So he threatens the absolute shit out of him, basically. First of all, he shows him a badge and then thinks, well, that definitely works, but just for shits and giggles, he brandishes a gun and pushes his face, because Lenny James is a piece of shit. So he says, some kids came in at this date, show me this date, where's the date, where's your book, you've got the records. The pages have been ripped out of the book, Rob. You'll never guess. They've been ripped out of the book.
Shocking.
So he can't find them. But then, when he's walking away in disgust, he remembers the memory of hiding the horse that he had a flashback to earlier in the film. Hiding the horse, he realizes this is the place that he did it. So he goes to the furnace from the memory, opens the grate, finds a piece of cloth, unwraps it.
The horse is there.
So, is he a real boy?
It sends him off.
Back to see Joy.
On a bit of a wibbly wobbly.
Yeah, he does. So he goes and sees Joy again, and Joy's like, I told you a real boy. And then there's a whole other scene with her saying, I told you a real boy. Yeah. And he's like, okay, so she says, who makes the memories then for replicants? So he goes to see Dr. Anna Stellin, played by Carla Jury, who designs replicants' memories, essentially. As a lovely scene when she first walks in and she's making the birthday cake and making the birthday party. That's a really lovely scene. And he says, how do you know if a memory's real or not? And she's like, sit in the chair and I'll use my magic machine to tell you. And then she looks at the memory and starts crying and says, someone lived this, yes. And he quietly loses his shit in the presumed realization that he is, in fact, a real boy and not a replicant. And he has been hidden away as the children of a child of a replicant. And everything's been a lie.
But you would have thought he could have just checked by looking for, like, a barcode on his, like, little finger bone.
Or in his eye or something.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Anyway, not to pick holes in the plot.
That is true. Oh, and then it turns out that actually it doesn't matter that Indiana Jones was there all along. Yeah, that is. Let's not do that.
All right.
shush. You're right, but shush. So
he absolutely loses his shit to the point that he gets arrested.
Yeah, he fails his baseline test. He's given 48 hours to sort his life out, or he's going to get retired. She says, I can get you out of the station. You've got 48 hours to re-report.
Which is twice as long as they would have given Randolph Scott. Blazing Saddles? No?
Oh, yes. Okay. He lies about killing the kid, by the way. He says, I've taken care of it.
Oh, yeah.
Taken care of it. So he goes home, and then, oh, shit, Mackenzie Davis is there. And then she, like, syncs with Ana de Armas, and then they have a robo threesome.
Yes.
Now, this is a really cool effect.
It is.
You can probably guess how it's done. I mean, they shot the scene twice with each actress against a green screen. It's green screen with the same choreography. And then in the scene, every time it reverses shot to Ryan Gosling, not Ryan Reynolds, there's one Ryan Reynolds that they digitally replace into the scene, and they essentially superimpose.
Just comped the shit out of it.
But the level of work that must have taken for it to be her face and her hair, the hands to be slightly out of sync. Apparently, the hands and stuff being slightly out of sync is just a lucky accident because nobody can do choreography perfectly. So they didn't have to fuck with it too much.
But there are certain points where it is almost perfect. But yeah, the sync is off. And then, frankly, because it was so complicated and it took so long, cost so much money, they just stopped doing it. And what you're meant to perceive there is that he is totally invested in the illusion being Joy. The reality is they just ran out of time and money.
To keep doing it for an entire sex scene would have been a fucking nightmare. Yeah. So. But, like, the way to make sure the arms are the same length and that kind of stuff, because Ana de Armas is a very petite woman and Mackenzie Davis is a quite
presumably they put her in a box.
But what I mean is the hands are the same size and all that kind of stuff. It's very good. It's a very, very good effect. So, after they've had sex, she chucks out Mackenzie Davis and he uploads Joy to what I've referred to as the dongle.
Mackenzie Davis has put something in his pocket.
Oh, yes.
That's going to be quite important in a minute.
That's going to be quite important. She puts something in his pocket, and then he uploads Joy to a dongle so that they can't track her because she's not then hardwired into the system by tracking her.
Yes.
So they're tracking Joy, not him.
Yeah.
So he goes off to see Barkhad Abdi, who is an actor you might recognise from Captain Phillips, who is playing a character called Doc Badger.
I quite like it.
I like it. No, he's very good, actually. He speaks Somalian, unsurprisingly, because he's Somalian, who basically says there's loads of radiation on this horse, and this radiation is from a dirty bomb. So they know it's from Las Vegas, because presumably someone set off a dirty bomb in Las Vegas.
I mean, sure.
I mean, if you're going to. Of all the places you're not going to miss.
I'm pretty sure it was
if you have
the,
to do
the
it.
Bomb went for a good time, and it just got really dirty.
Yeah, indeed.
It was a clean bomb when it went in.
So,
seen things, man. It's done things.
So he goes and sees, and that's a nice little scene. Doc Badger is actually going to be in something that we'll talk about later, so there's no point mentioning it now because I haven't mentioned it already.
Okay.
So he goes off to Las Vegas, another lovely driving scene. And this, Las Vegas, the orange kind of glow of the whole thing is obviously the Deakins of it all, the Roger Deakins of it all. He loves a bit of an orange glow, that kind of filter colour and that kind of stuff. As do I, I've got a Deakins boner. And I think I've been pretty good not to mention them. There's not actually even, there was a section just called Deakins in this, and I thought, I'll take it out because it'll just take the mickey out of me.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, I do have a section in my notes just called Orange!
So orange is this part. This is the orange section. And that is actually because of Roger Deakins. He suggested it be like this, because of course he did. But apparently it's based on a dust storm that overtook the Sydney Opera House in Sydney. And it was exactly that. The huge orange aura around this enormous opera house and all that kind of stuff. So that's what it's based on. The next part of my notes just says bees.
Right.
So he finds life because he detects bees, and there's loads of bees, and I'm sure there's some kind of significance to bees in a hive and other things.
But well, it means that there are hives and somebody's tending them.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, indeed. So anyway, there's hives and there's someone tending them. So anyway, while he's doing that, Love's gone to the police department.
To be fair, I don't think he's ever seen bees before, because he does something that you're not really meant to do.
Yeah, indeed. It's, yeah, it's
exactly. Elbow deep in a hive.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so while he's looking at the bees...
I like to think that there was an outtake where first he did the hand and then he got the beard of bees.
The Deckard's like, what the fuck are you doing? I hope you've got a piece of... what the fuck is this?
God, get off.
He looks at the dog. Really? You really? So yeah, so while he's with the bees doing the beard, Love is visiting the police department, and excuse me, this is where she's really revealed to be a real fucking zealot, a Wallace zealot essentially, where she's really talking about like the supremacy of the replicants and all that kind of stuff, and tries to find out from Joshi where Kay is.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I don't know. And then she then says a really interesting line, actually, that I really like, is, you know, they trust us because we never lie. And then Robin Wright gives us some smart aleck answer. And she immediately says, I'm going to tell Mr. Wallace that you tried to shoot me first. So she immediately contradicts herself. You know, it's a very, very interesting line. So she kills her. And then very, like a sack of potatoes, picks her head up and scans her face into the machine. And then, like, bangs her head into the table and drops her. It drops her. It's, like a sack of potatoes. And then she's like, oh, because I've got your machine now, I know where Kay is. So she knows that he's in Las Vegas. So anyway, he's in Las Vegas. Oh, now I've got it in my note. He's in Las Vegas in Orange Deacons. There we go. So he arrives in a casino. He walks around. He goes to a piano and does the same, exact same piano key playing that Deckard does at the beginning of the first film.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanders around. It's very nice. It's an abandoned casino. It looks very cool. And he meets Deckard, who quotes Treasure Island to begin with. You don't happen to have a piece of cheese about you. That is because when... You know the Blade Runner that gets blown up at the beginning of the first movie when he's talking to...
Yes.
Yep, yep. When he goes to visit him in the deleted scene, he's reading Treasure Island. So it was a reference to a deleted scene. So this movie is not just made for the fans of Blade Runners. It's made for those fans of Blade Runner. To go, oh, that's a reference to a deleted scene. I appreciated it. that was a weird one. And then they have a big old fight.
In the midst of Elvis. Marilyn Monroe.
Yep.
And some go-go girls.
Liberace.
Oh, and Liberace shows up.
Liberace pops up. During this scene, apparently, Harrison Ford actually punched Ryan Gosling in the face. And it's like he actually hit him in the face, and he apologized by sitting down and drinking a bottle of scotch with him. And it's like, this is a really nice story that your publicist told, and I like it.
It's a good story, although I wonder how much of it was just Harrison Ford wanting to just punch him in the face. Yeah. What's going to happen?
I used to be you! So basically, I like this because he basically rope-a-dopes him. He just lets him hit him until he's tired. So Ryan Gosling just lets him hit him in the face until he's tired, and he says, Deckard says, well, we could do this all day, or we could just go and get a drink. which is a nice little moment. I like it very much. And then we have a scene which is made almost entirely for me. So they go and sit at a bar, and they start drinking whiskey. And he tells them about Rachel, what was her name, and that he left, they had a child, and that he left the child with the Replicant Freedom Movement. Which I've written a note as saying the most awkward dad meeting of all time. Because, don't forget, Ryan Gosling thinks he's his dad. Rick Deckard says everyone had a part to play. Mine was to leave. Sometimes to love someone, you've got to be a stranger. And then it's shown that the animal figure, the horse figure that was cut, that he had as a child.
Is one of a set.
Is one of a set, exactly, that Deckard has carved. Now, I love that scene. I bloody love that scene. Deckard essentially loses his temper and loses his patience and storms off. And then it's... he goes over to the jukebox and he watches a hologram of Frank Sinatra sing my favourite Frank Sinatra song, One for My Baby, One for the Road, while drinking whiskey. So it's a Blade Runner scene with my favourite Frank song while they drink whiskey. I was quite happy. I won't let you. I was last night when I watched it as well.
And then he blows up his car.
Yeah. So then Love turns up and blows up his car. Blows up his car and then she blows up the car, steals Deckard, and then as I put it, she becomes a real kill Joy?
No.
Because she kills Joy. Yeah. We've still got another whole podcast to do after this. Anyway, he gets all fucked up and she takes Deckard. The replicant freedom movement arrive and rescue Kay, and he wakes up by a fire because they've tracked him with the thing that Marriott put in his pocket.
Turns out that that wasn't what Joy was using, it was what they were using.
Dun dun dun.
Wheels within wheels.
Wheels within wheels. So anyway, he wakes up by a fire, then he wakes up in a room which for some reason half filled with water. And Fraser, who is played by Hayam Abbas, tells him about the revolution. She's like, hey man, you should help the revolution. And he's like, oh, I don't know. And then they're like, oh, you should kill Deckard, because otherwise he's going to lead Wallace to the kid. And then he's like, oh, what were you talking about? No, the child was a girl. And that he, and she's like, oh, you thought it was you. We all wanted it to be us. But actually, it's not. It's a girl. And he's like, oh, I better know who she is. It's that doctor I met earlier, isn't it?
I saw the memory, and she reacted to the memory.
Exactly.
And it's a bit of a reach.
And I'm a detective, and I probably should have figured that one out, but I didn't. But anyway, okay, fine. I think it makes enough sense.
Sure.
It makes enough sense.
I must admit, by this point, everybody's arse has gone to sleep, and a couple of people have started looking at their watch.
Disagree. A couple of people have, but those people, dumb asses. Anyway.
Numb arses.
Very much. Very good. Very good. Very droll. Anyway, so we cut to Deckard. He's been taken to meet Wallace, and he's got a new Rachel.
Yes.
And he mentions to him, perhaps you were designed to fall in love with Rachel, to create this replicant child, thus stoking the fire of whether Deckard is in fact a replicant.
Which is basically the point that you're confirmed that Wallace has massive, mega, god complex weirdo-ness.
Yes, indeed.
And this is one of the few moments where Hollywood's done it, because they've not yet done it right that I've seen. They're getting better. Where the whole de-aging, like, fakey composite of an actual human face.
Yes.
And it works because she's not meant to be right.
Yeah, she's not meant to look quite right, exactly. And also it's her face on a younger person's body called Lauren Petto, who's an actress. So it's a face on a body as opposed to the Irishman of it all, where he looks 20, but actually he's got the gait of an 80-year-old man.
No, the gait and the approach is right, but the face is slightly off, the expression is slightly off.
Well, Lauren Petter was coached by Young on how to create a performance and the way she'd hold her arm and that kind of stuff. The voice
that must have been really fun for her.
Yeah, indeed. The voice of the replicant was actually created by a sound-alike, not by Robin Young.
Yes.
But she was
voices, it turns out, you can fake like crazy.
Yeah.
It's really easy.
Apparently, yeah. Someone doing a
faces,
really good impression.
Not so much.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this is another thing where it's like, was Deckard designed to mate with Rachel? He says, is it love or mathematical precision? It's an oft-repeated line in this film where Deckard says, I know what's real. And Kay says that quite a lot, and Love says that as well. And then when he basically says, I don't want to be with this whatever version of Rachel that you've created, they just fucking shoot her in the head, which is, like, it's a very cruel, very blunt moment. So he's like, well, fuck you then, and guess what? We're going to take you off-world because there's no laws there, and we can just interrogate the shit out of you and torture you and find out where you live. So she flies off. Kay's like walking around. He's like, I don't know what to do, man. Maybe I should take up the mantle of the revolution. And then there's the amazing color palette, the pinks and the purples and the blues. And he meets the giant Joy, who's got a different voice, which is actually the voice of the assistant director, I believe, who was a filler voice, and then they left her in, where she calls him Joe. And she says a number of key phrases that she said to him over the film, essentially kind of reinforcing that, you know, she's not real and that kind of stuff. So off he goes to find Deckard and to save him. He basically saves him by shooting a load of cars down and then crashing into one. There's a cool, like, they skid along the wall, you know, the bottom of the wall in the water and all that kind of stuff, skid to a stop. They have a fight, they both shoot, they both get shot. There's a really cool fight in the water between Love and Kay while Deckard is tied up in the car and can't escape as the car is sinking into the water. She stabs him and kisses him, and as she walks away, she says, I'm the best one, which is, you know, tying into very much her arc of, like, being the chosen, you know, Wallace's chosen one. And then just as she's about to free Deckard and get the fuck out of there, he pops up out of the water, one hand chokes her to death, and then drowns her.
Nice.
As one does. And he's been gut shot the whole time. So anyway, so he then says he's going to fake Deckard's death and say, look, you died in the water, whatever, I'm not actually going to kill you. It's time to take you to see your daughter. So he goes to see Dr. Stelling. As they arrive, Harrison Ford goes in, and Kay lies down on the steps. A new version of Tears in Rain by Vangelis, which is a new version by Hans Zimmer, starts playing, and essentially he stops breathing and dies on the steps. And he says,
well,
that's the end of the film.
Yep.
Fucking great movie.
That's right. It's not as good as the first one.
So we should mention that you were talking about not talking about the blackout and a certain amount of establishment of the universe, establishing of the universe, which is not is done in passing. I think they do a fair job of you can kind of put enough together that you know.
Oh, yeah, I was just being arsy.
Right, sure. Sorry. Sure. But
I mean, when you consider that this is much as the original was, but not as much as the original was.
Yeah.
There is more exposition here than you ever get in the original movie.
Yeah, there's way more explanation.
It's very. There's still a load of stuff that's just like, yeah, this is just the thing.
Yeah.
You never work out what you never get told what the nine planets are. Mm. You never really get much beyond the focus on the core players.
It is interesting what they explain and what they don't explain, isn't it, to be fair, in that respect, I suppose.
I think they explain the stuff that basically is required to understand to move the plot along.
Yes. Yeah,
It's called the Tenet effect.
pretty much, yeah. Denny Villeneuve and Christopher Nolan have definitely got that in common.
And I would have been much happier if they hadn't.
Okay.
They could have actually trusted in the cerebrality of the audience. And frankly, if you walk out of Blade Runner going, wait, so was he a robot or not? That's the point. The entire point is ambiguity.
That definitely is the Christopher Nolan of it all, is that there is a lot of things like Inception and things like Tenet and things like that. There's so much that could be left up to the audience to talk about and decide. But because they are also... 250 million dollar Hollywood movies, the studio goes, no, you have to tell them, we're giving you $250 million.
It is, and as I've said before,
I think it's horseshit.
It's stupid people ruining for the
rest of
us.
Yeah, I know, I agree. It's got absolute horseshit. It's
but,
absolute
horseshit. There is...
It means movies like this that will just lack nuance.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely, no, I agree.
Well, it's got nuance coming out the arse. It's just also then... pointed at as a, see the nuance over
it was
over
the daughter it was the, remember that woman we met it was her the whole time.
Oh
yeah, indeed. The woman they're literally keeping in a bubble, that one.
The only other bit I don't like about this, because if I've got this right, at the end of the first the original Blade Runner, Roy kills Tyrell, right? Quite nastily.
He like crushes him, garages him.
So yeah, he gets proper upcomings.
Yeah.
Well, this doesn't.
No, I know.
And it bugs me.
Nothing happens to him, right? Yeah.
He's literally there being super Leto-y and evil.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of the evilness is established.
It's
and
like,
you genuinely loathe him.
Yeah.
And... oof.
Yeah.
That but end maybe, you left loose?
But also,
thanks, guys.
Maybe that's a commentary on the modern world. Is that they don't. You get the henchmen, but the big corporate owner, overlord, doesn't get touched. They wouldn't, would they, right? Doesn't matter what happened, they'd get let off scot-free.
I'm just saying that, you know, that's the concession that Hollywood has permitted us to make.
I know. So that, exactly. Like, we're giving something to the audience that we're going to explain away every single nuance of the narrative. However, we're not going to give them the.
Just saying, if I were making this,
no. Can you turn up with a katana and just do him?
No, he would have got absolutely. Just
Jared
desserts.
Leto with the tiny weird tadpole robot things flying around him
clicking.
With a samurai sword versus Ryan Reynolds. Fuck it. Bring him in. But versus Ryan Gosling, who has somehow been blinded. It doesn't matter why. He saves Deckard.
Oh my god, it's like a blood sport moment.
Exactly. And it's blind guy versus. It's a Zatoichi blinds. Oh, wow. I think we just wrote Blade Runner 2049 and a half. This is a short movie that's 10 minutes after this movie. Actually, I'm not dead.
The opening credit is, the year is still 2049. Yeah. And another thing.
Yeah, another thing. Kay didn't die on the steps, and now he's going to fight him. So speaking of narrative gaps, there are three short movies that they made to fill the gap between 2019 and 2049, which would be the first movie and this movie. The first one of which is Blade Runner Blackout 2022. As you can probably guess by the title, it's what the blackout is. This is a 15-minute anime directed by Shinichiro Watanabe, who made Cowboy Bebop. So pretty fucking high pedigree as far as that goes. A rogue replicant called Iggy, who is a rogue deserting soldier alongside Sapper Morton and Racer.
What's her name? Yep.
So Dave Bautista and the one-eyed lady from the end who's holding the baby in the photo. They're all part of a group that escape. But he carries out an operation essentially to detonate a nuclear warhead over Los Angeles, and the EMP wipes out everything. Now, this is because there is the Replicant Registration Act, where all the replicants are registered, funnily enough, on a big digital register.
Lots of marbles.
Yes, so when he blows up the warhead and the EMP wipes them all out, so they've got no more records.
Because they literally lose their marbles.
Yes, they literally lose their marbles. Edward James Olmos reprises his role as Gaff in this film, because it takes place canonically 3 years after the first one, and he's tasked with hunting them down. He fails, because they do blow up the bomb, and it does black out the whole of LA and most of America, and yeah, indeed. The music is composed by Flying Lotus, who is an electronic jazz musician.
Sure.
Lots of different soundtracks and albums to his name. It's really, really great music. It's all playing on the original Vangelis stuff. And yeah, it's great. I highly recommend it. It's just a cool little 15-minute anime, lovely Watanabe kind of stylistic animation, and also explains what the fuck the blackout is, which is good. The second two are 2036 Nexus Dawn and 2048 Nowhere to Run. They're both 6 minutes long, and they are directed by somebody that Denis Villeneuve describes as a very good friend of his, Luke Scott, who he asked, because right. They were very good friends,
okay.
To direct these films.
He's like, Luke, there's no other reason that I'd be talking to you other yeah. than our solid, endearing friendship.
And I just respect you
friendship.
So much as an artist. Oh, did your dad direct the original one? What a weird coincidence. That didn't come into my... So anyway, so mean. Anyway, so the first one, the 2036 Nexus Dawn, is Jared Leto meeting with like the lawmakers to say, I've made the Nexus 9 and I want to start making replicants again. And it is quite fucked up because they're like, no, you can't do that. And then it turns out his bodyguard, who is the new type of replicant all along, and to demonstrate how he is so obedient, gets him to first of all slash his face up with a piece of glass, his own face up, Nexus 9, mm-hmm. and then cut his own throat. And it's got Benedict Wong in it.
Right.
Yeah, so that's good. And then the second one is Sapper Morton, who is living in like a slum, basically, and is acting as a doctor. And he's looking after a mother and daughter who are unwell. And they start getting harassed by people. And he basically goes full crazy replicant soldier man on these thugs and seriously fucks them up as only a man of Dave Bautista's size can. Revealing his true nature, and they're like, oh no, now I'm scared of you, and it's like a whole Frankenstein.
Then he runs away to farm bugs,
and then the opening scene of Blade Runner 2049 is he's been there since 2036 growing them bugs, and they're pretty good.
They add
a little bit of colour. They released them as like promotional stuff, but they're quite cool little intro. It's like a 28 minute long essentially short film before the film itself. And it adds a little bit of colour and fill stuff in a little bit. It's good. Nice. Did you watch?
No.
Oh, okay. You should.
Didn't even know they existed.
No, they're good. They're good.
They weren't on at the cinema, so.
No. Gone are the days when you get to watch a Daffy Duck cartoon first.
You might judge me for this, but rewatching it for this podcast is the second time I've seen this film.
No, I wouldn't judge it.
Because every time I sit down, I think, oh, Blade Runner 2049. I'm like, or
yeah.
Blade Runner.
And that's something we're about to come to, actually, in the Amazon one-star reviews, is that...
I didn't write any.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got one here. It's got your IP address on. But no...
123.456. See, my IP address is my luggage.
And it's the same criticism a lot of people have of Blade Runner, which is like, it's really long and really slow.
Blade Runner's not long and slow.
I agree. I don't think that's true, but lots of people say that.
No.
A lot of people say that, and a lot of people still fell asleep. Anyway, shall we see a sampling of some of these idiots?
Yeah, go on.
So just three Amazon one-star reviews this month. There were lots, actually. But there's like a bajillion reviews, right? And like 2% of them are one star. And most of them said exactly what I said. It's long, it's slow, and it's boring, nothing happens. Everyone walks really slowly. Don't watch fucking Lord of the Rings, mate. So, number one, Rebecca, one star, May 2018. Nop, nop.
Is that it?
Nop, nop.
Nop, nop.
Nop, nop. I don't know. Nop, nop. It's one star, so best it'd be like, nop, nop.
I mean, it could be more plaintive, like, no, no.
It could be. Oh, and that occurred to me, yeah.
But either way, helpful.
Nop, nop, one star.
Is nop like no in a different language?
No, all of our reviews are in English. Well, that doesn't mean... But five people found it helpful anyway, regardless. Ryan Glantz, looks nice, has some interesting points. One star. August 2019. Looks nice, has some interesting points. Ryan is clearly a thinking man. And he's also clearly 15. This one was like watching Half-Life 3 that got toned down by a board of directors to fit the proper saviour complex salvation tale for the brainwashed masses. Ooh, edgy. Good job, Graham. Good job. Good job, Brian. I'm not able to say your name properly. Good job, Brian. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So anyway, so it was like Half-Life 3, but not as good.
Yeah, because the brainwashing.
Because of the brainwashing for the masses, isn't it?
Yeah.
Got to brainwash the masses. Anyway, my last one, and the reason that I've only got three, because this one is fucking awesome. Zeddy, August 2019. Another one where all of his reviews are, and I'm not kidding, all Bible reviews. Boring start and middle. Ending was great when we stopped watching to play with bottle caps. It's the last time bottle caps come up. You know that question asking the three people you would bring to a desert island you're stuck on? This movie is worse, and I hope you bring Hitler, Bin Laden, and Voldemort. The deepest message we got from this film was that humanity gave up on AI in the future, but managed to pass the Turing test by making people dumber and slower. And what the fuck? The coat didn't even look green. Guess they're colorblind, too. Thanks, Eddie. Thanks for chiming in, mate. You know that question? What's happening? I was scrolling through it. It was all,
I mean,
just,
to be fair,
they're slow and boring.
I do know that question. It's called Desert Island Dicks.
Oh, is it?
But
okay, right. Okay.
I don't think I've ever.
And how does that apply to this film?
This was worse. This was worse than. What was his original
answer? This movie is worse than if you brought Hitler, Bin Laden, and Voldemort to a desert island and you were stranded there. If that's what he's saying, I don't think that's true. If that's his thesis statement, I'm not sure that's the case.
I like that he thought of two.
Also, Hitler and Bin Laden wouldn't get along.
Yeah.
And Voldemort?
Voldemort and Hitler, certainly. But Hitler and Bin Laden.
I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. The pure blood thing, they might be right.
Yeah, but muggles. He's not a pure blood.
No, yeah.
I like he thought of two very real evil people and then went, I need a third.
Not Pol Pot or.
Voldemort.
I really wish he said, not a third, Bin Laden. But yeah, so Zeddy coming through. Coming through for us there. Thanks.
How many people felt that?
Nobody felt that was helpful. Nobody.
And that's,
I mean, maybe
that's
I should,
the real tragedy.
Maybe I should give him a helpful just because he's given me something to talk about.
Don't encourage them. These are the people are the reason that we can't have nice things.
I want to encourage him, though. I want him to write a book. And then we'll do our new podcast is reading Zeddy's book.
Worst book club ever.
If you think you could do better, why don't you write a novelization of a sequel to Blade Runner? And then he does, and then our podcast is reading his novelization of Blade Runner. Okay, maybe not.
Why does Adolf dream of electric sheep?
It was good, and then sheiks at the end. That was what nailed it. That was really what nailed it. It was very good.
Right.
Right, so the very last bit I want to talk about before we finish this very long conversation about...
There is one bit. Can I just jump in? Because you had a little note, and we haven't really covered it. And I would normally mention it, because it's super awkward when you have to do a sequel to a film that arguably has one of the most famous soundtracks ever made.
Yes, of course.
And you get Hans Zimmer to do it, and he does a really good job of being really, really carefully respectful the entire way through.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You can
yeah.
literally feel him at times just, I'm just going to tiptoe up to Vangelis, but I'm not touching him. I'm not touching him. It's fine.
The
it's
tears
fine.
In rain bit at the end is just like, just a little bit
at
of that.
At the very end is the closest he gets, where he kind of just puts a hand on the shoulder.
Yeah,
it's like, it's okay now. It's done. Yeah. But yeah, also, Mr. Zimmer needs to lay off the sub bass, man.
Wee.
Wow.
Do you know what that bit, that re, that is, the same as he did with Inception, that's a male voice choir that he's passed through everything in the whole world and then done into. The interesting about the music is that, first of all, they asked ELP from Run the Jewels to write a soundtrack, and he wrote a whole score and composed a whole score, and they just never called him back. He referred to it as either rejected or ignored, but he certainly never heard anything. They then asked Johan Johansson, who I love. You
yes,
know I love
as do
him,
I.
He wrote the score for Arrival. Absolutely insane, fantastic Icelandic composer who very sadly passed away a few years ago. He wrote an entire score, and then Denis Villeneuve decided that he wanted it to be closer to Vangelis. So then you got Hans Zimmer and Benjamin Wolfish, who wrote the Vangelis-inspired score that there is, because Johan Johansson was like, no, I'm just going to do my thing because I'm fucking Johan Johansson. I'm an amazing composer. Unfortunately, Johan Johansson had to sign a non-disclosure or whatever the fuck it is.
So he can't release it.
Never been allowed to be released. So there is an alternate Blade Runner 2049 soundtrack composed by one of the best film composers of the modern age that we'll never get to hear, apparently.
That's right, it'll come out as an NFT.
It'll come out. You know what? I'll be bidding on that one. I'll spend all that sweet We're Drunk and We Know Things NFT money on it. That's what I have. But yeah, so that's it's a great... I do like the score. I think it's very good. I love Johan Johansson enough that I wish I could hear that, because he was robbed. You know, he couldn't... So he wrote the score for Arrival, which is an incredible score, and he got turned down for a nomination for an Oscar because one of the pieces he uses during it, he uses a slight reworking of On the Nature of Daylight by Max Richter.
Mm-hmm.
They're very close friends. And because he does, it's not entirely original, because it's not an entirely original composition, he wasn't eligible to be nominated for an Oscar.
Really? So Hollywood will not award you unless you are 100% original.
Yeah. Yes. Ah, you've hit upon my thesis statement here, Rob. Yeah. Because there's 3 minutes of a 2.5 hour score, which is a reference to a wonderful piece of music by Max Richter, wasn't eligible. Horseshit.
Yeah.
I believe we call that horseshit. So, last bit. And that is Legacy / which is basically, there's a sequel, sort of. So, there's an anime called Black Lotus coming out, which takes place in 2032 in the aftermath of Blackout.
It's a sequel prequel.
And it's centered on a female replicant, and will be familiar characters from the Blade Runner universe. However, it is produced by Shinohiro Watanabe, of fame, which is already awesome, and directed by, I'm going to say this wrong, I'm sorry, Shinji Aramaki and Kenji Kamiyama, who directed The Standalone Complex 2045, Ghost in the Shell. Also directed a lot of Evangelion
I said, yeah, like,
films.
Yeah, totally them. Yeah. Totally that.
Oh, good, yeah.
Yeah.
And a load
I
of
have
Evangelion
watched that
movies.
Anime, but...
They are most famous for doing giant mech action animated movies, so hopefully there'll be some giant mechs in the Blade Runner film.
Maybe that's it, because we know what the Nexus 6 looks like. We know what the Nexus 8 and 9s look like. Maybe the Nexus 7s were just 20 yeah. feet tall.
Yeah, yeah. They're just looking kaiju motherfuckers. But, yeah, so the trailer's come out. It's basically badasses running around with fucking samurai swords and shit.
Sure.
Cool as hell.
All right.
So I'm like, yeah. So it's produced by Adult Swim and Crunchyroll. So if you've got Crunchyroll app, it'll be on that. If you've got Adult Swim, it'll be on that.
Sorry,
and
you want commission?
And if it, no, I'm just telling people how they can watch it because I'm excited.
I'm sure they'll work it.
And in the UK, you can watch it on Channel 4 because they got the Adult Swim stuff. And that's all from me.
And that's all from him. Join us in 2 weeks' time when we're going to be talking about robots.
Robots?
Robots.
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 Are you not going to touch on recommendations?
No.
No, I mean, come on.
Watch Westworld season 3.
Watch Westworld season 1 first. I mean, don't watch the third.
No, just go straight and you won't know what's going on.
I think there'll be enough Westworld in the next app, mate.
Oh,
think
yeah,
about
true.
It.
Yeah, come on. Come on. He's so new to this, isn't he? He's like the ingenue.
Well, they can listen in 2 weeks' time.
Are you doing the outro?
Am I?
I'm waiting for you to stop
you know
talking
what?
So
yeah,
I can do
you
the
know
outro.
What? Yeah.
Can you shut up?
Let's see what he does.
I don't have the script.